Let's go. We're starting off Parshas Devarim. There's going to be a little bit of a pause in the middle, but at least we'll be able to start it off. Eila Devarim Asher Dibur Moshe Al Kol Yisrael Be'Evar Yarden. These are the words that Moshe spoke to all of Bnei Yisrael on the other side of the Jordan River. Ba'midbor Ba'arava Mol Suf Ben Paran Uvein Tofel V'Lavan B'Chatzeres V'Dizahav. In the desert, by Baal Peor, opposite Yam Suf, between Paran and Tofel, Lavan and Chatzeres V'Dizahav. Those places are ridiculous. Some of them don't exist, Rashi says. They don't exist. There is no such place known by that name. And plus, aside from the places that we don't know of, a lot of these places are just totally not true. They weren't anywhere near the Yam Suf. They weren't anywhere close to the Yam Suf. Doesn't mean they're opposite the Yam Suf. Everything like that. But first, let's go into Devar. There's a Seder to Chumash. There's an order to the Chumash. Why do we have the Chumash in this order? Bereishis Shmos Vayikra Bamidbar Devar. So here we go with the Panach Raza. The Panach Raza starts us off, and the Rabbeinu Bechaya really adds on to it. He says the following. Bereishis is first, because the first thing that you got to do when you look at the world is understand that the world was created by God. You have to know that there's Chiddush HaOlam, that the world was renewed by God. It's the root behind all emuna, behind all belief of everyone in the world, which leads you to believe that there's a God, which leads you to have reward and punishment. However, that's not enough for a Jew. That's enough for a goy. That's enough for somebody who's out there who's not a Jewish person. But a Jewish person needs more. We don't only need emuna that God created the world, that there's a God out there. We also need emuna sayichud. We believe that a Kaddish Baruch Hu treats us as a special nation, that we are our own nation, and the Jewish nation is not like any other. We also need that special, it's called Emunah Sayichud, Emunah of the individuality of the Jews as opposed to any other nation, and how special we are, and that's Shmos. Part of Bereishis is about that as well with the Avos, with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but it goes on into Shmos, where we become the nation of God, where we go out of Mitzrayim, and He saves us out of Mitzrayim, and we become that full nation. Well, such individuality requires us to be able to do something for God, to bring us closer to God. That's Sefer Vayikra. Vayikra is all about Korbanos, and the Kohanim are the closest people that we can get to God, for people to come along and to be able to bring themselves closer to God and do things to make them come close to God. That type of an idea of a Kohen leading the way in the Korbanos is the next thing to tell us what to do now that we are individualized and made separate. And then we need a Makom to do that. We need a place for all this to happen. That's Eretz Yisrael. All of Bamidbar goes through the travails, the travels, I should say, with the travails of Bnei Yisrael as they're going through the desert, getting to Eretz Yisrael. They didn't make it, as we know, because of the Meraglim, because of everything that happened. But they tried to get onto Eretz Yisrael. That's why Bamidbar comes in. And finally, they get to Eretz Yisrael. Devarim is 36 days. I should say a little bit more. It is 71 days before they get to Eretz Yisrael. It's Rosh Chodesh Shvat. They entered Eretz Yisrael on Yud Nisan. They ended up going on Yud Nisan. They ended up going straight there. It was a travel that went all the way through Bamidbar, all the way to Devarim. And once they went into Eretz Yisrael, that was considered like the Geula, the redemption of Bnei Yisrael. It's like Mashiach came. Once you come to that level, that's how we end off. The Gra says that every Parsha in Sefer Devarim stands for a different 100 years during this cycle, of the 5,000th year up until the 6,000. Each one leads up to the Geula. There's Devarim, Vaschanan, Ekev, Re'eh, Shoftim, Kisetze, Kisavo, Nitzam, Bayelech go together. Hazinu and Zosa Bracha. Each one stands for 100 years. 5,000 to 5,100 is Devarim. 5,100 to 5,200 is Vaschanan, and so on and so forth. And if you wanted to, you could find where we are in the Chumash. If you looked up 5768, says the Gra, you could find it inside here, because it's in the Chumash. There's something that represents our year, somewhere in Nitzavim Vayelech, somewhere around that area. And the point is, we're supposed to know this whole thing is for the eventual Tachlis of creation to be bring about the Gula. All together, these 11, that's why I said Nitzavim Vayelech go together. Okay, we'll stop for now, we'll pause. Why, next part. We have another Panach Raza. Sefer Devarim starts off with the word Eila. Eila ha-Devarim. These are the words that's going on. It starts with an Aleph. It starts with the letter Aleph. Aleph means what in Hebrew? Aluf means what? It can mean a leader. It can mean a chieftain. Very, very good. A person who's a leader, a person who leads everybody else, a person who's in charge. There are four sedras in the Torah that start off with the word Eileh. There are four sedras that start off this way. It's Devarim, Noach, Parshas Pekudei, and Parshas Maaseh. Two in a row, by the way, Maaseh and Devarim. They start off with the word Eileh. Eileh stands for 36, because there are four Siddurim for those four parshios, made up of 36 Mesechtas and Shas. That's what it's supposed to be as a remez over here. That's because Devarim, and the reason why we do it, we ended off with Devarim. Devarim is the last one that ends with Eileh, and it's the fourth one that that starts with Eile, it's because Devarim is the beginning of Torah Shebaal Peh. We have to understand that. Devarim is Torah Shebaal Peh. Why? Pshat is, Moshe Rabbeinu started speaking to Bnei Yisrael on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. He spoke to them until Zion Adar. Until Zion Adar. Shvat is a 29-day month. Altogether, that gives him 36 days to speak the Gematria of Eile altogether. He spoke to them for 36 days. They did not know Parshas Devarim up until that point. For the past 39 and a half years, they had never heard Parshas Devarim before. But there are a lot of mitzvahs here that don't appear elsewhere in the Torah. For example, Yibum, Chalitza. These are big mitzvahs, but they don't apply before this. They only apply right now. So what are you going to do about Yibum and Chalitza? When did the Bnei Yisrael learn all about this? So he called everyone together. Rashi says in the second Rashi, Kinsam Kulam. He called them all together, gathered every single one of the Jews together, and he said to them, guys, we got to get all together and we got to darshan out these parshios now. We're not going to have any time to do it otherwise. Nobody go back home. Nobody do anything else. Stay with me. Darshan out the parshios with me. We got to figure out what each line means. We got to figure out every halacha. And people gathered in chavrusas. He told them over psukim. He went through a parsha with them. They memorized the parsha. And then they figured it all out during those 36 days. The definition of Torah Shebaal Peh is something they didn't write down. They had to go over with one another. And Moshe Rabbeinu was the quinta. He was the Rosh Hashiva. And everybody told over to Moshe Rabbeinu their pshatim, their ideas that they got down. They knocked her out. They knocked the other guys out. They tried figuring this out. They tried putting things together. They built up houses and built up halachos from all of it. And they ended up figuring out these halachos are true. These halachos can't be. These halachos are like that. And Moshe Rabbeinu paskin and all of them. And that was Devarim. It was 36 days of pure Torah Shebaal Peh. Yes, it's Devarim. It's a Sefer and Chumash, and it's just like any of the others. But the definition of the Parsha is Torah Shebaal Peh. And because they all went together and they got together like that, we know that every Jew represents a letter in the Torah. So when we're saying all the Jews got together, that means the letters got together as well, and the words got together, and the psukim got together. That's why. Smuchim. What does smuchim mean? In art scroll language, it means juxtaposition. The juxtaposition of this by this. Why is this put next to this, and this put next to that? And why is this over here, and this over there? That only, not everyone agrees that there's such a thing throughout the whole Torah. But in Devarim, everyone agrees to smuchim. In Devarim, every single person out there agrees there is a concept of smuchim. There is such a concept of juxtaposition. Why? Because this whole parsha is about putting people together. It's about getting people together and learning it all together as one. So in this seder of the Chumash in Devarim, the whole seder was said to be Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's why, says Rav Wolfson at the very end of this whole vort, El Kol Yisrael. Now what he should have said is El Bnei Yisrael. That Moshe spoke El Bnei Yisrael. Wouldn't that be that's the normal Lashon. He always speaks to Bnei Yisrael. Moshe spoke out to Bnei Yisrael. What's El Kol Yisrael? Says Rav Olson, the last letter of El, Kol, and Yisrael. What's the last letter of each one of them? A Lamed. And what does Lamud mean? Once again, learning. They learned El Kol Yisrael from each Jew. They learned something. They got something out of every Jew that was out there. There was a Limud, a Torah that was going on through all of them. Each one taught the other, and because of that, it became stronger learning. The best learning you can ever imagine. There never was learning like this before. Everybody understood it with one another. They got together with one another, and it was the greatest learning you could possibly imagine. Pure Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's this entire Sefer of Devarim said over in 36 days. Now the Ramban says, some of the mitzvahs are repeated. Says the Ramban, some of the mitzvahs are repeated. Some of them we go over again, like Shemitah. There are other things that are mentioned. Avodah Zarah, don't do Avodah Zarah. The Aseret HaDibros is repeated over here. A lot of mitzvahs are repeated over here. Many of them are repeated. However, there's brand new mitzvahs as well. But there's not a single mitzvah that concerns Kohanim. There's not a single mitzvah that applies to Korbanos. And not a single mitzvah that applies just to Levim. Not one of those mitzvahs is brand new or repeated. All the mitzvahs that apply to Kohanim or Korbanos or Levim are all in Vayikra or maybe even in Bamidbor. But they're not in Devarim. Why not repeat them? Simple answer. Kohanim's reason, hey. Quantum is reason. What does reason mean?
Alacrity.
You must go to Wash U. No question. His reason is normally translated, I guess, as zealous, as people that have zeal, that go through and they hurry through it and they try to get things done and they try to run through things and everything like that. That's the word that they usually use for his reason. Alacrity, if I was really smart, and zealous, if I just read art school translations. That's what it would normally be. That would normally be the translation between them. Okay, that's an easy answer. But let's give another answer. On the bottom of the Ramban, he gives some great answers. He says like this: Shevet Levi was not like Bnei Yisrael. What happened to Bnei Yisrael over the Midbar? Over the Midbar, over the past 39 years. Over the past 39 years. What happened to them? But after that, they died. They slowly but surely died off. This is a brand new door. This generation that's going into Eretz Yisrael is a brand new generation. Not all of them heard Moshe Rabbeinu the first time at Har Sinai. Not all of them heard it. Some of them might have. But Bnei Yisrael definitely needed reminders. They needed to be told, hey, this is what you got to do. They definitely needed that. So Moshe Rabbeinu went up to them and said, I know you guys haven't heard this in 39 years. I know we've been darshaning. We've been learning together. But you haven't heard all the mitzvahs again. I'm going to do another Aseret Dibros right now for you. So he went ahead and he told them again. But the Levium didn't need that. Why not? Levium didn't die. Levium didn't die. The Gezerah that was made because of the Meraglim of everybody dying between the ages of 20 and 60 was Bnei Yisrael. But Levi never died. It's because it's the same people. They taught their kids. They were the ones who heard it from Moshe Rabbeinu originally. They taught their kids taught their kids, and anybody that was around still knew it from the original source. They got it firsthand from those the fathers or their Rabbeim that were there at Har Sinai. So Levi didn't have a problem whatsoever. The rest of Bnei Yisrael had a problem. But this one, this answer trumps all. This answer trumps all. This is an unreal answer. There is a halacha, and I spoke about it a little bit last week, but not here, somewhere else. There's a halacha. When Jews go to Eretz Yisrael to fight, when Bnei Yisrael was going to go inside Eretz Yisrael to fight, they were allowed to eat and do anything they wanted, even if it was B'Isra. For example, the one problem they couldn't have a Yafas Torah, because all the nations that they fought against had to all die. You're not allowed to let anyone live. You had to kill every single Jew, every single one of those nations that were there. So you can't do Yafas Torah, you're not allowed to sleep with the woman there. But other than that, if they were hungry and they wanted to have pig, mutter. Not just mutter, but the evet. Mutter lechadchila.
They could eat the people.
They could go ahead and eat people. Very good. He was there last week. They could eat people if they wanted to, says the Radvaz. The Shal Shachus Radvaz says if they wanted to, they could eat them. That's why it says v'achalta es kol ha'amim. You will eat all the other nations. Normally it means consume, but it means no, you'll mamish eat them. You'll mamish eat them. You'll use them. Kilach menu haim, the Meraglim said. Yoshua and Kalev said they are our bread. Literally, we're going to make sandwiches out of them. We're going to go ahead and do that. It was mutter. Not only mutter, lechadchila. They were supposed to do it. I don't want to say supposed. Obviously, it's a little bit off. But they were allowed to do it. And even though some people said, well, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that, whatever it is, they were allowed to do it. That is the halacha when it comes to waging a war in Eretz Yisrael against those nations. It was mutter for you to go ahead and do that. Only one nation was not allowed to do that. Only one part of the nation was not allowed to do that. And that was? The Levium and the Kohanim. Levium and the Kohanim were not allowed to do that because they had to keep their Kedusha. So listen to this. It took 14 years to fight the nations and to conquer all of Eretz Yisrael and then divide it up between the people. 14 years that took. Do you hear that? 14 years. After 14 years, Bnei Yisrael was going to start living in that place. They were going to forget the halachos that they learned 54 years ago. So Moshe Rabbeinu reminded them and said, 40 years later, guys, you're going into Eretz Yisrael. I know it's going to be hard because you're going to have 14 years where you're not going to be keeping halacha. You're going to have 14 years where you're not into Kedusha. Remember these halachos when everything is said and done. You need these halachos when everything is completely finished and you get all your land. That's what you got to do. That's what he ended up saying by him, and he had to tell them. But Bnei Levi, did Bnei Levi need that? Bnei Levi did not, because they never had the problem. They were never swayed. They never did those Yisurim. So they didn't have to worry about that stuff. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to remind them, because they'll always know. They're never going to stop doing what they were doing within their Kedusha. They were never going to do something Tamei that they'd have to stop doing. That's the difference between them. That is an unreal answer for the Ramban. I believe it's brought down by the Klei Chemda. All right. Let's get down into some Kabbalah, because we haven't done Kabbalah yet. So we're going to give over a Ben Ish Chai and an Igra Dekala. The Igra Dekala is a Bnei Yisachar. The Bnei Yisachar is the Igra Dekala. We have Medinov, the Rebbe Medinov. We'll talk about these people, but regardless, let's go into the Ben Ish Chai. Says like this. It says, Elad Var Mashir Dibra Moshe Al Kol Yisrael. He spoke out these words of Musar to all of Bnei Yisrael. The Ben Ish Chai asks, why El Kol Yisrael and not El Bnei Yisrael? We already have an answer, the Lamed, Lamed, Lamed. But let's give another answer. Why did it say El Kol Yisrael and not El Bnei Yisrael? So Ben Ish Chai says also, when you give Musar to somebody, Be very careful with how you do it. You have a requirement of giving mussar to other people. However, don't be direct, because it's very embarrassing. You go up to a guy and you say, you just spoke Lashon Hara. He's going to deny it. He'll deny it. He's like, no, I didn't. No. And he'll make up something as an answer as to why he spoke it out. Oh, the guy's not really Jewish anyway. Oh, he's not really from. Or I thought you'd believe me. I thought you were condemning the law. Kibetray. He'll make up something because he doesn't want to hear it directly. The way to give mussar and for the guy to hear you without you sounding like a BA, a born-again, you know, Jew, and stuff like, oh, you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara, and like one of those. In order for you to say it in a good way that people will look at you and say, like, I understand what you're saying, I understand, I'm going to stop doing that. The way to do it correctly is to go about and say it in a roundabout way. Says Ben Ishchai, the best way to do it, bring another Talmud Chacham with you and talk about that chait in a roundabout way. Like, let's say you saw somebody speaking Lashon Hara. So around that guy, let's say it was this guy right over here, I'm not going to say her name, so it's not for posterity, but let's say it's this guy named Ami. So that's guy right over there, and me, David, go around. What I want to do is I'll take David right by you, and I'll be like, oh man, I just learned the halachas of Lashon Hara the other day. It's crazy. I didn't know you weren't allowed to. And then say something. You weren't speaking directly to that guy. You were speaking so that he could overhear you. And trust me, even if he's pretending he's learning, he's overhearing you. We all know that. He's overhearing you. He'll hear you. And instead of being embarrassed and deny it and say you're wrong or this or that or whatever, he'll hear it for himself and he'll decide to do tshuva. Says the Ben Ishchai, that's the best way to give someone mussar. Don't go up to the guy and say you're a Rasha. Go up to somebody else and say anybody who does this is a Rasha. And that way the guy will figure out, oh man, I did that. And now I have good excuses, but you know, I am a bit of a Rasha anyway. And then the guy will end up learning from it and end up going around. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu went El Kol Yisrael. He went to all of Bnei Yisrael. He went over to every person. He went publicly. And he had to tell them that they did things wrong. You guys did the Meraglim. You guys tried going into Eretz Yisrael too early. You did the Mapilim. You did the Egel Azov, you idiots. What's wrong with you? That's really what he wanted to say. He wanted to say to them, you guys are a bunch of fools. I can't believe you did all these sins. That's what he wanted to say. But he couldn't because they would deny it. They say, well, that we didn't want to make the Egel Azov. We really wanted to do this. We didn't really have that in mind with the Raga. We really had that. They had other things in mind. So what Moshe Rabbeinu did was he did it in a roundabout way. He spoke it out halachically, says the Ben Ishchai. He went around to everybody and said, guys, what's the halacha by Lashon Hara? They said, here's the halacha. So like, oy vey, would we speak Lashon Hara? They said, no, we would never speak Lashon Hara. And that way no one would speak Lashon Hara, but they knew they did before and they do tshuva on it. Because they didn't think that Moshe Rabbeinu was directly saying something bad to them. They knew on the outside, like, oh, I remember 39 years ago I went there and I did that. And they realized what they did wrong. That's the way to give mussar. That way, hocheach tochiach es amisecha, give mussar to your nation. And the pshat is, and then, lusisa love chait. Nothing bad will happen. The guy won't carry his sin forever. By excusing it, give them mussar correctly so he doesn't excuse his sin and carry his sin forever and never do tshuva, thinking that he did the right thing. That's one way. But now we get real Kabbalah. The Igreta Kal is the Bnei Yisachar. The Bnei Yisachar was I guess you could just call it the Hasidish Rebbe par excellence. We'll just call it that. We'll call it. There's absolute unbelievable things in the Igreta Kal. It's my new sefer for right now. We'll see what ends up happening with it. It is absolutely an unreal sefer. We said over here that this refers to Musa. He told them, Bamidbor, Barava, Mosuf, Ben Pari, Ben Topel, Elam, Chatzeres, Vedizahov. Bamidbor, you guys argued about the desert and you said you wanted to go back to Mitzrayim. Barava, you sinned Baal Peor. Mosuf, you argued at the Yamsuf. You said you wanted to go back to Mitzrayim at the Yamsuf. Bein Paran, you had the Meraglim. Bein Topel, Elam, you made fun of the Mun. You made fun of that Mun. Vechatzeros, you had Korach, Vedizahov, and you made the Egel Azov. He said you guys did 7 major sins. Says the Igreta Kal, when you give mussar, you can never just give the guy mussar and cause an accusation in Shemayim. A guy once went up to the Ben Ishchai and said, I met these Jews in France and they're Rishayim. They're Rishayim Gemurim, all these Jews in France. And the Ben Ishchai said, you're a fly. You're a fly. So the guy's like, what are you talking about? He said, a fly flies around until he finds some blood. Finds like a little spot on the person's body. Then he goes down and he finds that blood. The whole body could be clean, but if there's one cut, the fly is going to find that cut. The fly is going to find that cut. He told him, you're garbage. You sneak around in the garbage. You think they do one thing that's wrong and that's it. These Jews are good Jews. They do one thing that's wrong. They do two things that's wrong. They vandalize signs that say Obama on them and kill in Sacramento. That's all they do. That's all these people do and nothing else. Anybody that's not from Chicago, you have no idea what I'm talking about. That's fine. But they vandalize the signs, but otherwise they're good Jews. They try to put on tefillin in the morning. They do this. They do that. They have all these things that these guys do that are the right things. And you're concentrating on the bad. You're concentrating on that one bad thing that these guys do. What's wrong with you? That's what the Ben Ishchai told him. Listen to what he says. So what the Bnei Yisrael says is when Moshe Rabbeinu said this out, he couldn't just say what they did wrong. That wouldn't be enough. He had to say also how to make it good. So he didn't say straight out, you were at the Meraglim, you had Korach, you had the Egel Azov, you had everything like that. What did he do? He said it in words that would be sounded the other way around to show the Mesirah's Nefesh of Klal Yisrael. When he said, Bam Be'ever Ayarden, he said, we're on the other side of the Yarden. We fought against Sichon and Og. We defeated the Klipos Agedolos, these huge giants full of Tuma. We destroyed them both. Only very Kadosh people would be able to do that. So you see that we're full of Kedusha right now. Bam Midbor, we followed after you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, into a desert without any food, without any drink, and we trusted you. Ba'arava, around that same time of Shittim, when all the Jews were sinning with the Zonos, with all the prostitutes and everything, Pinchas got up and was Moser Nefesh to kill Zimri and Cosby. Pinchas got up and did it. Mol Suf, by the Yamsuf, who jumped in first? Nachshon ben Aminadav and Shevet ben Yamin jumped in and were Moser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael to save Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Bein Paron, by the Meraglim. Look at the Bein Paron. Who are the people between the Meraglim? You hear that? Between the Meraglim that said something good, Yoshua and Kalev, even though they were Moser Nefesh, to say it against all Bnei Yisrael was against them. Everybody in Bnei Yisrael were ready to kill them, they were ready to stone them. Yoshua and Kalev got up and said, you guys are wrong, and we should go inside Eretz Yisrael. It's Bein Paron, look at those in between the Meraglim. Bein Tofel V'Lavan. This is unbelievable. Bein Tofel V'Lavan refers to the Mun. We definitely know this, right? Bein Tofel V'Lavan refers to just like this. He says that when you go inside and you have all the mun and everything like that, look at the difference, the bane, the difference between Tiflus, the Gashmius in this world, and the Lavan, the Ruchnius inside this world. Look at those guys who eat regular food, and look at the Jews in the desert who eat the Lavan, who eat the mun. That's the difference between them. Look at the spirituality that we have. So you're complaining because one time they complained about the mun. Kadosh Baruch Hu, look at the Kedusha that Bnei Yisrael has from that mun, as opposed to the tuma that all the other nations have from their gashmis. That's Bein Tofel V'Lavan. That's another, the Bein. And finally, V'di Zahav. And even though they did Egel Azov, look how they didn't give, they gave enough to the Mishkan. All their gold, they took all their gold, picked it up and gave it over to the Mishkan and gave everything as a kapara for the Egel Azov. Look what they did as an atonement for everything they did with the Egel Azov. So Kadosh Baruch Hu, I know they've sinned. I know they did something wrong. It's okay because they did something good with it as well. They tried hard as well. And they did right things. Don't think about the bad. Now for Bnei Yisrael, it was Musar. Because Lamaisa, they knew they did something wrong and they heard it and they said, you're right, we got to do tshuva on all this. But for Kadosh Baruch Hu, it was a sanigoria. It was something that's known as, not an accusation, something as a defense for Bnei Yisrael. It was a perfect defense attorney that got up there and said, it's not their fault. You're right, there are things that they did. But they tried. They tried. And not all the times can we be perfect. We're not Malachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're not Malachim. We can't do that. That's the pshat behind it. Now that is just an absolute unbelievable pshat. Now here we go. The Igud Akala is another word. It goes on by Esav. It's in a very strange pasuk. Okay, Vayomer Hashem Elai Lamor, Rav Lachem Sovis Ahor Azeh, Pinu Lachem Tzafona. It's enough of you going around this mountain over here. Go to the north. Travel to the north. Now let's think about that for a second. You've been around Esav for 36 years. They were around Esav. Maybe even 37 years. They were around Esav's land. All of a sudden, Kadosh Baruch Hu says to him, that's enough. Let's go up north. Let's go up north. Says the Igud Akala, there's something that's got to be behind this pasuk. Har is a name of the Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara is called a mountain. It's called a huge mountain, meaning the sins of a person become like a mountain in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and you can't break through that mountain. It's just a huge mountain of sins that are there in front of Hashem, and you can't connect yourself back to Hashem. That's a Har. Safon is also referring to the Sata. Because we say, Mitzafon Tiftach Ara'ah. The evil comes out from the north. The north is where the Shadim come from. It's the only part of the world, says the Tiferes Yonas and Rabbi Yonas and Eifshitz, where all the land is connected with one another. Because the Bering Strait in Alaska and Russia, and basically Greenland, you can connect all the land around, as opposed to any other part of the world where there's huge oceans in between and Tuma cannot cross water. Mayim negates Tuma. So therefore, in those places, the Tzafon is where the Ra comes down from. That's where the Tuma comes down from. The Tuma comes down to the rest of the earth from there. See, Yitzhar is also known as Tzafon. Says the Bnei Yisrael, the Igrit Kala. There's two different types of sins. There are the big sins, the stuff that people see, and the stuff that you know you did wrong. You really know you did wrong. Those are the mountains. You know, you go ahead and you killed someone, and you did it in front of other people. You're like, you got up in front of a bunch of people and you just sliced someone's throat. You know you did something wrong. How are you like, oh man, that's a big avera. Like, they know you did something wrong there. If you speak out something terrible, you lied terribly and you got caught with it, you know you did something wrong. You know you did something wrong. That's a har. That's a har, a mountain that's there, that the Yitzhar becomes like a mountain. It's a huge mountain. You did something terribly wrong, but at least it's something that you can see. What does Tzafon also mean? Tzafon, hidden. Very, very good. There are other sins that are hidden. Gaiva, bad thoughts. Thinking horrible, horrible things, as well as averas that you do in private. Averas that no one will ever find out about. Things that you do in the privacy of your own home, in the privacy of your own whatever it is, in your car, in your place, whatever it is, things that you do privately, that no one will find out about except you and a Kaddish Baruch. Those are known as tzafon. Those are the sins of the Yitzhar known as hidden ones, that are hidden and that no one else knows about but you. Says a Kaddish Baruch, who's such a crazy line. It's very easy to do tshuva for the harem, for the mountains. Everybody's helping you. I murdered somebody. Okay, here, penance, couple Hail Marys, put it over, whatever. Do all the things that you need to do. It's easy to do tshuva for that. Because you know you did something wrong. You realize you did something wrong, and everybody knows you did something wrong. So everybody will go and help you, and they'll say, yes, you got to do tshuva. You got to do this, you got to do that. They'll tell you how to daven, they'll tell you how to do tshuva in the proper way. That's by a har. It's very easy to do it by a mountain. But by the hidden sins, nobody knows about them. So how are you going to do tshuva for them? You're never going to think about them. When Yom Kippur comes along, unless you got the bidui of the chidah, written by our old Yitzi Kagan, you're never going to know what in the world you're doing in the middle of your bidui. You have absolutely no idea. You're never going to know, oh, I did something wrong in my thoughts. You have no idea. You forgot that thought that I had in the middle of nowhere on a Sunday in the middle of March. There's no way, no way you're going to remember those sins. So how are you going to do tshuva for them? They're impossible to do tshuva for. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rav Lachem Sov Esahor Azaz. Samach is always interchangeable with a sin, so that could be a sin. Rav Lachem Shov as a Hora. It's enough that you've done tshuva around the harem, around the sins that are known as mountains. Penu, turn yourselves away. Usu Lachem Tzafona, and start learning how to do it for tzafon, for the hidden sins. That's not easy. That is extremely hard. But Bnei Yisrael was on a level now. After 39 years in the desert, they were ready now. Now you can start working on those hidden sins. Until now, I don't think you guys had the ability. You guys weren't there yet. But 39 years later, you have a chance. I think you have a chance. You know what Chazal say? It takes you 40 years to understand what your Rebbe was talking about. 40 years. 40 years. I've been learning. I can't say I've really been learning. But I've been in learning, in a base medrash, pretty much all day long. For I think it's 11 years now. I believe it's 11 years altogether. 11 full years. I'm not going to understand what my Rebbe told me 11 years ago until another 29 years from now. 29 years from now. That is, it's awesome to think of. Absolutely awesome to think of. Almost three times as much as I've learned right now. That's how much more I have to learn in order to understand what my Rebbe was talking about. That's absolutely crazy. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Bnei Yisrael. Listen guys, it took you this long to get here. Now you can start working on it. Remember the famous Rav Elie Lopian? Rav Elie Lopian, that he used to work on his eyes to the point where he wasn't able to see people in front of him. He could be looking at a woman dressed immodestly and he wouldn't see her. He wouldn't see her. So a Talmud of his came up to him and said, Rebbe, I want to learn how to do that. He said, how old are you? He said, I'm 16. And he said, it's too late. It's too late. You can't work on it anymore. You can try, but you'll never get to my level. Because I worked on it from when I was 10. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And to be there, somebody came up to me today and told me that he had an issue with his staklus. He was looking at things. He came from back from Eretz Yisrael, and he was looking at things. It's just a problem. I told him, you're coming to me. If I told you I had no problem with the staklus, I would be the biggest liar in the history of the planet. There is no one that doesn't have an issue with the staklus. There's no one out there that has an eitzah. If somebody tells you that they have an eitzah, they have a way of getting around the staklus, and it doesn't include blinders or tearing out your eyes, they're liars. They're absolute liars. There is no way to do it. There's nothing you can do. All you can hope to do is just keep praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'lesesuru acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem. And even that, the best you can hope for is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take those pretty ones away and just show you the ugly ones so that you don't feel bad. Like when you walk into Target and every single person there is just like the ugliest person you've ever seen. She's like, Baruch Hashem, I'm not shopping at somewhere high class, you know? Never go to those high class places. Just go to Target and you're fine. Then you're fine. That way it works out a little bit better. I don't mean to be a little bit... I am. Okay, whatever. I am. Either way, regardless, that's the idea behind it. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's nothing you can do about it. You just try and that's that. That's the Igra Dekal over there. Now, here we go. You got another thing over here. Moshe calls Esav Achinu. Look at the next pasuk. It says in pasuk Dalet, "There's a Om Tzav Leimor." You should command the people, saying, "Atem Ovrim Bigvul Achechem Bnei Esav." You are going around the border of your brothers, the sons of Esav. Ayoshem Beser, they live in Seir. The Yumikem, they'll be afraid of you. V'nishmartomo, but you got to be careful of them. Why is Esav known as our brother? I mean, that was a long time ago. Is Esav still our brother? But by the way, this is all over the place. Esav is called brother, not only by Yaakov Avinu. Esav is called brother mamish throughout Tanakh. He's known as a brother everywhere. There's a main base of Shoeva gives about five examples of where they got it from. Rav Schwab goes to about five examples of where he's known as our brother. It's mamish all over the place. What is the deal with calling Esav our brother? What's the connection between us and Esav? Yeah, we came originally from Yitzchak, but they're gone now. They're not Jewish. They have nothing to do with us. What in the world do we have a connection with Esav for? What's that connection with Esav? The idea is like this. This also has to do with the Satan. You could go the other way as well, but there's one thing. Esav never worshipped Avodah Zarah. You ever notice that? There is no place where it calls them Elohei Edom, Elohei Esav. It doesn't say that anywhere. I know Chazal say that Esav was over on Avodah Zarah, but it doesn't say anywhere that they had their own gods. Elohei Amon, it says. Elohei Moab, it says. Elohei Tzidonim, it says. Elohei Plishtim, it says. Elohei Mitzrayim, it says. But Edom, nowhere. And even Elohei Midian, they have Midian, they had gods there. But in Edom, nowhere. Only one place, and it was much, much later on in time. It goes into Elohei Edom by the times of the last kings of Eretz Yisrael. Last kings of Eretz Yisrael. That means Edom was a kofar. There's no question. He knew there was a God. He believed that God was Hashem. That Hashem was God and that everything was out there. But he was willing to deny him. He's willing to go up against him, lehachis, to anger God. He knew he was out there. He didn't want to believe in gold and silver. He knew that gold and silver were nothing, that there was no other such thing as a God. They were better than the Jews in that respect. The Jews went over to gold and silver. Micha brought a Avodah Zarah out of Mitzrayim. But Esav never even thought of it. Esav knew these gods are nothing. God is number one. God is the person who's in charge. God is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no question about that. But I don't want to listen to him. I want to go up against God. So in that sense, Esav is our brother. We believe in the same God unlike every other nation in the world. We both believe in the same God, us and Esav. So they're called our brother. They get that gift of being known as Yaakov's brother, as Bnei Yisrael's brother throughout the Chumash, until at the end of the Malachim when they start going off. That's when they go off. But number two, there's another thing. Did you know what they did with Amalek? Don't you find it strange? Esav had a lot of kids. A lot of kids. But Amalek is known as a separate nation. Totally separate nation. Never do you find that Amalek is Edom. You don't find that anywhere. Why? Why don't you find that anywhere? What happened with Amalek? Listen to this Medrash. Esav kicked Amalek out of Seir. Esav took over Seir, took over the entire land, and Amalek tried to join them, to come along, and he said, no. You're the son of a concubine. You're the son of a Pelegish. You don't belong with us. We're the regular sons of Esav. And they kicked Amalek out. They didn't want Amalek with them. Amalek was not like them, and they were too bad for them. And they said, forget it, we don't want to be with you. They have a tremendous chus, Esav, that although they were brothers with Amalek, they didn't want to have Amalek anywhere near them. They kicked them out and kept them away and did not let Amalek live anywhere near them until Agag died. When Agag died, Agag was killed by Shmuel Anavi. At that point, that's when they didn't have a choice. The only Amalekim were around, the only Amalekim that were left had to join Esav. And they hid with Esav and they became Esav's Amalek within the whole boundary of Esav. But nobody really knew about it. That's why when Yoav, who was the general of David Amalek's army, when he fought Esav, he went and fought them for 6 months and killed all the males of Edom. Says the Gemara, why in the world did he go up against Edom and kill their males? Why would he do that? There's no chiyuv to kill the males of Edom. There's no chiyuv. And why did it take him 6 months? What was this, guerrilla warfare? Why in the world did it take him 6 months? His wars took days. It didn't take months. What was it? Shot is, it took him 6 months to find Amalek within Edom. He did a security check through every person in Edom looking for Amalek. And all the people that he found that were males from Amalek, he killed. It took him 6 months to do that. That was when they joined in. So for now, they're still Achenu. They're our brothers, and that we both hate Amalek. That's the difference between them. So even though Esav is a bad nation, they got two things going for them, which are very, very good. They didn't believe in other gods. They didn't believe in Avodah Zarah. And number two, they were not friendly with Amalek. They always hated Amalek as well. All right, we're going to end off with one other thing over here. One thing, I'm not going to be able to say Yaniach's story, but it goes like this. Og's bed is an Amo. Anybody notice that? Very, very strange. It says the pasuk like this. Ki rak Og melech habashan nisham yeser rafayim. Only Og, the king of Bashan, remains from the rest of the giants. Hine arso eres barzo. Behold, his bed, his crib, is made of iron. Oh, an iron crib. Ooh, that's harsh. Halohi Barabbas b'nei Amon. Isn't it among the generals of Amon? Isn't that crib among that place of Amon? Teish Amos Orka, it's 9 amas long, the 4 amas rachba, and 4 amas wide, the amasish, by the ama of a person. What in the world is going on here? Why do we care about the crib? Pasuk Yud Aleph and Perek Gimel. What in the world is going on here? And what's it doing in Amon? Well, Og didn't belong to Amon. Why was it by Amon? Why? What is this? What in the world is going on here? And shouldn't it have been in Bashan? Wouldn't that make sense? He lived in Bashan. He had a crib. If it was so important that he kept it around because he wanted to show everybody how strong it was, look at what it was. Now he's a baby. I don't know. They don't keep it by him, and by Og. Why is it in Amon? Why did it go to Amon? This is an unbelievable shot. So first, the Mambi Shueva says one quick answer. Since the quick answer is because the Rephaim, who he remained from, he was the last one of the Rephaim, were destroyed by the Ammonim. It says it right here. Am gadol v'rav aram kanokim. These Ammonim, these Rephaim, were great, huge nations like giants. V'ashmidem Hashem mipneim. God destroyed them in front of Ammon. V'yirashum v'yishvu tachtam. And they were driven out, and they lived instead of that. It's in Pasuk Chof Aleph and Perek Beis. That means that the Rephaim were plundered by the Ammonim. The only giant that survived was Og. Who had Og's crib from when he was a child in the land of the Rephaim? Ammon did. So Ammon took the crib and kept it by them the whole time. And that's what it means. Rak Og melech habashan nisham yeser Rephaim. Therefore his bed was with the Ammonim who destroyed the Rephaim. That's a very good answer. That's a quick answer. But this is an awesome answer. This is how we're going to end off. Meshech Chachma says, the Or Samech says, the ancient Greeks used to worship people and weapons. They took out a sword. You know, like, they always say, like, the sword is a name. Like, I call this Jim. This is my sword, Jim. And they celebrate the sword, and they said, the sword is what won me the war. Or my shield is what won me the war. Or the giant that's in charge, the giant that's the one who defeated the whole army, he became the guy that everybody worshipped. They make a statue of him. They make a statue of Caesar, and they make a statue of this, and whatever it is. To say he won the war. He's the one that did everything. Everybody bows down to the idol because they say, oh, this is the strongest among us. Og was over 700 years old. and he was really huge. Really huge. And really strong. And he used to win wars by just flicking people or stepping on them with his feet. He was considered a god. And Amon took his crib, as a sign of godliness and made a whole Beis HaKnesses out of it. Instead of an Aron Kodesh, they put up Og's bed and they davened to the powers of Og. They davened to Og. That's what it was doing in Bnei Amon. Oh, they went up to Og and they said, Og, we'd like to worship you. Og is like, oh, I got my crib. And he gave them his crib and he gave it to them and they took it over to their land and they served it. They worshipped it and they took it as their own form of idol worship so that they'd be able to have. That's why the pasuk goes on and it says, it's in Bnei Amon, it's big. Ba'amas Ish. It's by the Amma of a regular person. Because as great and old as Og was, he was still an Ish. He was still only human. He was no more than a human, no more than that. He was not a god. He was a mere person because he died. 100%. And that's what we mean by that, by Amas Ish, by over anything else. Alright, we got a story to tell, but we're not going to do it right now. It's the story of Yaniach. Come back next week. I don't know if I'm going to be here. Stop right here. Have a good shot.